Houston trying to snap it before the play count. Here comes a rush against Stroud on fourth down, and he's going to go down. The Chiefs not only hold, they get a sack. George Karloftis. Sneak beating the chain back to his left. Dangerous as a receiver. Stroud going left. He's going to be wrapped up and sacked back at the 24 by George Karloftis. The second big sack of this game by Karloftis. And for the Chiefs, five sacks on C.J. Stroud. Big play here, 3rd and 10 Texans at the Kansas City 13. Tight triangle left of Stroud on the far side of the field. Takes the snap on the near side. Waits, calls another. Now he's going to call a audible. Agumba Wale is his halfback left. Stroud takes the 3rd and 10 snap. Stepping up, he's engulfed and sacked again. Karloftis is just eating this team alive. And that is the 8th sack by Kansas City.
Mitch Holthus on the call right here on 96.5 The Fan. Three sack performance from George Karloftis. 8 total for this Chiefs defense. They just got after it, especially when it mattered most in the final, I don't know, 8 minutes or so of the game.
Then they just started picking on that offensive line.
Big time. Well, and the
Texans are just going to pay Trey Smith based on that game.
Yeah, the tight end was matched up against Karloftis throughout the game, which was just a clear mistake. Also, even though the numbers weren't there, Chris eventually got home, but he was just so dominant, and what was also what allowed Karloftis and others to come through throughout the game. Did you know now that George Karloftis, because he has 3 sacks in that game, he's got 7 in his postseason career. He's 2 away from being top 20 in NFL history in the postseason.
When you play in a lot of postseason games, that's how Frank Clark got it.
Frank Clark ended up tied for 3rd, 13 and a half, just behind Bruce Smith and Willie McGinnis. But yeah, it's just, Karloftis is just so young still. That's what's amazing about it. He's 2 away from being tied with Mike Vrabel, a half sack away from being tied with Michael Strahan and Neil Smith in postseason history.
If he'd like to continue that, I would suggest re-signing with Kansas City and not venturing out into the free agency market when you after the final year of your deal, and instead doing it, because then it's like, yeah, to be in the top 10 gold, you only have to get to
11.
Yeah, that's it. Like you said, 11 sacks. So he's only got to get 4 more, and then he's already top 5. 4.5 more, and he's top 5 in NFL history. He just gets to kick it with Reggie White just for like appearing. And if you play in a dozen postseason games, that is not a crazy number. And so when you start looking through this stuff, it actually is just kind of wild. That defensive performance really, really stood out because they needed one of those come-to-life games where, like, everybody did it. Look, I could point out that Trent McDuffie did an excellent job on Nico Collins, because the only time Nico Collins caught a pass is when Trent McDuffie was briefly on the sideline and they were able to complete it to Nico Collins. Other than that, he didn't exist. But when your pass rush is doing that, you're a problem. Chris Jones, the one sack he won early in the game, he lined up against the rookie right tackle on the outside and beat him so fast that C.J. Stroud had no chance. This was probably top 3 defensive performance from the Chiefs all season. It's a huge reason why this game wasn't close, even though offensively I thought that there was some like rust and hiccups. It looked like the rest did them like wonders.
No question.
Getting to be healthy.
They're a fresh bunch. I mean, Chris Jones had a calf injury, you know, after that Texans game the last time. That's why he didn't play on Christmas Day against Pittsburgh. And I know he had flared up maybe at one point in this game, but he was fresh, good to go. We've acknowledged how many games these guys have played since the bye week and everything. And then Jalen Watson coming back. It was after the first quarter you saw the impact, because in the first quarter, in the secondary, Jalen Watson was really not on the field except when Trent McDuffie went out for, at the time, looked like could have been a much more serious thing with shoulder. He went to the blue 10 and then he was fine and played the rest of the game. But that was the only time Jalen Watson went in. And then you fast forward as the game went on, Watson started getting more snaps than Nazi Johnson, because Nazi Johnson got more playing time in the first quarter than Watson and Joshua Williams. And then they quickly shifted away from that. Overall, Jalen Watson ended up with like 49%, 50% of the snaps.
That's exactly what we thought it would be. Now next game, it can be 60, 65, 70%. And by the Super Bowl, because he'll get 2 weeks off in between, he can play as much as you want to. The only even slight weak area, I would argue, in the defensive game is that I thought Joe Mixon ran the ball slightly better than I was anticipating against the defense. But if you are the Chiefs, man, you will take that trade-off 100% of the time. And for bettors who I thought probably should have just known this going into it, I hope you all bet Dalton Schultz like we all said to, because he hit the over on a single catch, essentially, on like the second play of the game. Dalton Schultz had essentially already covered his number. But they held down Nico Collins. The rest of the wide receivers didn't show up. Dalton Schultz got a little bit. They got a little bit, and outside of that, It was there. And what I love the most about it is Spags is who he is, and I think there's at times in which the blitz has cost him. Their blitzes were back on point. That's like they've been getting beat a number of times this year on it. And this time around, I felt like either they were better timed, better planned, sent better players. Like, it's easy to like the defensive performance because almost every blitz was a hit.
That's the thing. This we knew going in. The Texans offensive line is not very good. It's a completely different. It's a completely different matchup on Sunday night. The Bills offensive line is light years better than what they just faced from an offensive line perspective. And so, you know, what they're capable of and what they dial up, these are teams that are familiar with each other. I still think the way the Chiefs played Josh Allen in the Week 11 game will be different. This feels like a Leo Chanel game on Sunday in terms of spying Josh Allen. And I think on that fourth and two game at play that ultimately sealed the game for the Bills back in Week 11, that was the complaint there. It was like, hey, was it just a great play call by the Bills, or did they not have a spy? Did they have a spy? I think the Chiefs will have a different plan for Josh Allen this go around, and Chanel's going to have to be a big part of it. But the offensive line, like, part of the reason why they had so much success on the blitzes is that O-line stinks. Like, Shaq Mason, who just came back from an injury or whatever for the Texans, is not very good. Not a very good lineman.
No, he's quite bad. And again, yeah, their offensive line is not good, which is part of the reason I told you going into the game, this is about as comfortable as I think you can feel going into a playoff game. No part about that game made me regret those thoughts going into it. I would say this next game is probably about the opposite of that. It's about the least comfortable you can go into any playoff game, knowing that Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen have played nearly even at every point except the postseason result. Not the play, the postseason result.
Yeah, we
is
saw
the
during
the area in which it hasn't been even.
We just saw during the break. I think it was Amazon Prime Video put out like a graphic, not just isolating the playoffs because we know the story there, but over the last 10 head-to-head matchups, it is not even just like almost dead even. No, exact. Not only 5-5, but they both have the same amount of points. 200. I think it was, what was it, 151 or 251, something like that. I mean, identical. But in the playoffs, it's been a completely different story. We know that.
But it's Batman versus Robin. I mean, at this point, the story's been told in that way where we will feel that way. But, like, you need, like, I've said this before. And, like, last year, the Chiefs won the Super Bowl. 2 years ago, the Chiefs won the Super Bowl more because of what they were able to do on offense and how they were able to go through the postseason run. Last year, I thought they won it more because of what they were able to do defensively. This year's team is a more balanced team. They can't afford to let either unit slip too much, or I think they find themselves in trouble. They need a certain basement. They need a certain mid-level of offensive performance. They need a certain mid-level of defensive performance in order to win these football games. But the defense still is the unit, you and I both agree, where it seems like they've had an easier time hitting their ceiling, having those big games. This year, we have seen the offense just click on all cylinders for all four quarters like once. I have seen the defense put up this type of performance 2, 3, 4 times, where they are the dominant group. They're good in the pass rush. They are good in the blitz game. They are good in the coverage game. They hold down your number one guy. The only thing that consistently gets this defense is tight ends.
And usually they've chosen that path. They've kind of chosen that path. Said, all right, look, ultimately you're not winning games because of what your tight end does against us. We're going to go ahead and make sure we handle, in this case, Nico Collins. Or this week it'll be, I'll say against Buffalo, it'll be interesting because the tight ends of Buffalo have typically done well in general and actually had an impact more so than some of these other teams. Like Dalton Kincaid has actually been, or Dawson Knox in the red zone have actually, you know, won some games for Buffalo against the Chiefs, I would say. Whereas some of these other teams, like, you know, Dalton Schultz, Isaiah Likely going off, didn't ultimately do much for those particular games involving the Chiefs and their opponents. So we'll see. Like, I think for the Chiefs, it's James Cook and it's Josh Allen. Those are the two most important things in this game.
Cook's been really good. He's been just turned into a really solid
16
NFL
touchdowns
running back
this year or something like
that. Look, I don't think he's Saquon Barkley or some of the guys who make the running back position look really important, but like, he has certainly added a nice layer to their offense. And part of it is because Josh Allen's such a good runner. You're like, damn it, which one was going to take the ball? And I don't want to have to guess. This is stupid. And you can't stop Josh Allen inside the two near the red zone or near the end zone anyway.
Yeah, the tush put,
that's just a guaranteed touchdown.
It's just like the Eagles in that regard. Like, they're that effective inside the 2 yard line. It's almost, which was why, what was it? Yesterday, I know they won the game, but there was a point where they had the third and short and they had Josh Allen in shotgun. I just don't get why some teams won't go under center.
We can talk about that later in the week because The Chiefs had a 4th-and-1, and they did a shotgun run. And I, for a moment, was like, I can't live like this. Mm-hmm. You could just do what other teams I saw do in this postseason do. Just give it to the tight end or whatever for this.
Have Noah Gray come back under center.
Yes. Yeah. Literally, there's a million choices.
In this case.
I know. That doesn't.
Perfect.
This is you and I apply to this, and I think that you're smart enough, and I think I want to educate sports fans. Just because something doesn't work doesn't mean it wasn't the right decision. And just because something does work doesn't mean it wasn't the wrong one. It's sometimes the way it works. Meanwhile, on the other side of the AFC, we got to talk about what is going to hang over the head now of Lamar Jackson for yet another year and maybe for even longer than that. Because I do think that this is funny in the Lamar sense where I don't think it's like terribly hard to defend him and be like, specifically, Mark Andrews let him down. Mark Andrews decided to stop running upfield and instead backtrack till the ball fumbled and also dropped what was, I think, a legacy drive for Lamar Jackson at the most pivotal moment of the game. But the only reason they needed the legacy drive is because Lamar Jackson screwed up. And the truth is, at this point, is Lamar Jackson has never had a clean playoff run where for multiple games in a row, he can make it without screwing something up. In the regular season, he'd only given the ball away like 6 times. And they, as a team, gave it away 3 times last night, and he was responsible for multiple of them. And so I'd love to come in here and tell you, but I said going into the game that this was going to be a game that determined which person gets buried as the person who just doesn't have it in the postseason, and Lamar has to wear that because he is now going to be like rubber stamped with that across his chest.
He might be like he's like Russell Westbrook. He puts up triple doubles. You know, he's great. He's always in the MVP conversation. He's won an MVP.
He's going to win 3 MVPs by the time this is done and not even made it to but 1 AFC championship game.
Yeah, Russell Westbrook has made it to 1 NBA finals, and that was, of course, with the Thunder. So, and he's never been able to make it since. You know, he's almost like Chris Paul. Chris Paul, a legend in the NBA, never made it to an NBA finals. That's Lamar Jackson.
The narratives exist for a reason, and it's just the way things go. The entire offseason is going to be, you know, now about Lamar once again knocking over the hump. I would argue that we kind of already had that this year. He's been so good. He's going to have a 3rd MVP here in a couple weeks. And now he's graded only on one scale, and that is getting to a Super Bowl. This would have been the biggest win in Lamar Jackson's career against Josh Allen. And they came up short. And you're right, he had an unbelievable drive at the end, and they should have had the 2-point conversion. But you can't make some of the mistakes you made earlier on. And that's why, going back to how we start about matchups and do we think the Bills are a better matchup versus Ravens, I still think Lamar is more likely to make a mistake in a crucial moment than Josh Allen. That's just, it doesn't mean Josh Allen won't have an interception on Sunday. I hope he does. But Lamar is more prone to doing that. It doesn't mean Lamar stinks or anything like crazy like that. But there are quarterbacks, when you're inside the top five and you're talking about Hall of Fame, you're talking about, you know, are they the 7th best quarterback or 5th, you know, whatever, right? 3rd best quarterback, however you want to compare guys, you get to the nitty gritty, the margins, and he is being judged on one thing right now, and it's understandable. And it's the lack of postseason success and in play in those moments. And that's going to be what goes with him until he changes course. I think the graphic they put up during the game was, if he gets his 3rd MVP, he'll be the only 3-time Super Bowl MVP winner. Like, that has, like, I think it was like, because Brady had 5 rings by the time he won his 3rd or something. Rodgers already had a ring by the time he won his 3rd. Like, you just, there was a whole bunch of quarterbacks they listed off. He'll be the only, I believe, 3-time MVP award winner not to even go to a Super Bowl.
Like, it's just there at some point, it's always the same thing. And what I've said about Lamar, and you and I don't disagree, Lamar is a top five regular season quarterback without argument. He is obviously one of the most talented guys in the field. He can do some truly special things. He has developed. He is into a excellent passer. All the stuff that used to be, oh, he's just a running quarterback. None of that's true. But in the postseason, he has one game every postseason in which he crumbles. He overthrows receivers. He tries to scramble around in a wet ball situation and ends up fumbling it away. He forces himself into these. And yeah, he can still do tremendous things where he drives all the way down the field and gives himself a chance. And his teammates hurt him. Like, somebody was pointing out the Isaiah Likely or the Derrick Henry drop down the sideline, but they got all that yardage back on the next play to Isaiah Likely. So that didn't really matter. But he eventually, he chokes. And I don't know if that's just like in his makeup, if that's part of the team stuff, if Harbaugh's not putting him in a good spot. Because I've told you, one of the biggest problems the Ravens have is Harbaugh, for back-to-back postseasons, has forgotten who they are. How many times have they run it against the Chiefs in that AFC Championship game that they lost by one touchdown? In a 17-10 game, they ran it like seven times gold or something?
Yeah, six, something like that.
It's crazy. Like, you can't keep letting your coach come in here and fumble the bag, too. This is going on Harbaugh a little bit, too. But he has bulletproof armor on because he has a Super Bowl title with Joe Flacco. Lamar has one single AFC Championship game appearance. That was last year.
Yeah.
And other than that, he's got a series of playoff failures.
Look, I like Lamar Jackson, but I can't help but remember all the conversations throughout the season about, hey, Lamar, Derrick Henry can't be stopped. You don't want to face them. Can't be stopped. Or, oh, they get more yards per play than anybody in the entire
DVOA
league.
DVOA-wise, this is one of the 15 best teams in NFL history.
That's right. Yeah. EPA this, all this.
A lot of advanced stats at like the Ravens.
And it didn't matter. It didn't matter. It turns out that you got to have the kind of the it factor in those moments. And Lamar's going to be a Hall of Famer. He's going to have three MVPs, and one day he might get there. But right now, it's fair to be critical. This is the reality of when you put yourself in that category, you're in a select few, people are going to be critical.
Like
It's not like Josh Allen played great yesterday, but he didn't make mistakes.
No, the truth is, like, if you could combine Lamar Jackson and Josh Allen into one quarterback, it'd probably work. One guy could handle the regular season, and then the other guy could handle the postseason. Because that's the other problem Lamar has is... Now, Patrick Mahomes, obvious, Josh Allen, and Joe Burrow have all been better postseason performers. Now, Lamar Jackson gets to the postseason at a far greater rate than Joe Burrow. But when he gets there, at least he performs well. And, like, it's hard to shake. Because, like, I don't want to turn it into this, like, Lamar can't play and just, like, some of these tropes that I think were wrong for a while. But the stats are the stats. The guy's worse in the postseason. Like, I don't fear the Ravens for that reason. He's worse. And Josh Allen didn't have some, like, humongous statistical day. Right. He had 127 passing yards and 20 rushing yards. But do you know what he had? Zero turnovers. None. And in a postseason game, that's the difference between winning and losing.
All right, let's get to it. A reminder, coming up in about 40 minutes.
Is this going to be opposing fan bases over the refs?
No, we're going to get back into that later.
We could just play clips.
I already let off some steam about the ridiculousness of those that have come down with Chiefs derangement syndrome. But let's get to the trash of the day. It centers around a flight. Okay, this was a United Airlines flight. It was en route to Phoenix from Chicago. Like, we've all heard of, like, mechanical issue or a flight. Unfortunately, you hit some
turbulence.
Some birds or whatever.
Sure.
How about a coyote? Like, that would not be the... So a United Airlines flight was headed to Phoenix.
I'm in the air. I'm not sure.
Well, on Sunday morning, United Flight 1727 safely returned to Chicago O'Hare International Airport to examine the aircraft after its landing gear struck a coyote during takeoff. six crew members, 167 passengers were on board this Boeing 737 MAX 9 when the incident took place. No injuries reported. The flight... there was a different flight that was diverted to O'Hare after striking a bird back in November, but we've heard that before, and that's more dangerous.
That's more in the sky. That makes sense.
And that's more dangerous. You're already up in the air. But a coyote, like, if I would have told you, hey, yeah, flight was delayed, guys. Sorry, on the runway, we ran into a coyote. Like, what?
Like, well, you're just not destined to go anywhere. That's the reality.
It was en route to Phoenix from Chicago. Like, I guess, and of all destinations, I wouldn't have guessed Chicago would be the one that you'd have the coyote. I would have guessed, like, New Mexico or Phoenix when we're likely to have the coyote. I would not have expected Chicago to have the runway with coyotes.
No, I can't say that I would, and that would be kind of ludicrous to assume as much, but that's just bad luck. Sometimes you ever just feel like you just take the L and you're just like, okay, it's not meant to be today, right? Like, I'm not supposed to go to whatever this flight is. I'm just gonna, like, if it's just like a for pleasure trip, and it was just like a 72-hour thing, just don't go. Like, you're not supposed to go if on runway you hit a coyote. Not supposed to be. And, like, think about the timing of it all. You are a giant moving object heading down a giant runway. A coyote has to happen to get in the area, running across at the exact same time, and then jump into the landing gear at that time. That's wildly bad luck. Like, I don't know, I don't know if it says this. Has an airplane ever been stopped for a coyote failure?
It didn't say. Coyote failure? Just running. I mean,
seems unlikely.
By the way, real quick, do we think it said the landing gear needed to be repaired? We all know once you get going, that thing, the plane's going pretty good.
The gear gets going up pretty quick.
Well, no, they didn't take off. I guess I'm asking, was the coyote killed on contact? because they weren't, you know.
I mean, you have to assume. Well, so.
I gotta assume it's the worst version of flattening, like a like do
we,
situation.
We was the coyote hit when you were going full speed ahead, or was it like you were just kind of slowly going? I'm guessing it was when you're going.
Coyotes move pretty quick. I don't think it's not getting out of the way of something going slow.
I'm guessing it was, you know, max speed about to take off, and then you heard a little bump on the flight, and they're like, "Oh wait, what do we hit?
We hit like a pebble." I guess in an airplane, you probably take that a lot more serious. You're like, what was that? What was that little bump? Do you think it feels different than like a normal?
Textline says it was ugly, like coyote ugly. Okay, well done. Okay.
That's a very dated reference, but we'll take it. Yep. I accept.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I've never even
Have you seen that movie?
Coyote Ugly? Yeah, but like 25 years
Drew,
ago.
I bet you Drew hasn't seen it.
I've never heard of
He's
it.
He's never heard of it. Do you know how old that movie is? Dude, that movie came out in like the early 2000s.
If maybe Drew's late 90s. Like I don't six. Know. It was a 2000 film, literally. 2000.
Yeah, I was five.
There's bars named Coyote Ugly all across the country.
Still?
Mm-hmm. In Nashville, they have some, a few other places. Yeah.
I feel like I'm supposed to make like a Looney Tunes joke. Like, did they draw like a tunnel inside of the side of a building or something first? Before, you know, you're supposed to go Wile E. Coyote instead. And, you know, he always gets back up.
Now I know who Wile E. Coyote I know who that is.
Okay.
Glad we got that figured out.
No, Coyote Ugly reference, no good for Drew. Wile E. Coyote.
Drew, you know what? You should watch Coyote Ugly. I think you would enjoy it.
You think so? You should
start a movie podcast about movies that aren't rated very well. And then you could start with Coyote Ugly.
See if Tarantino will go on your podcast.
I was going to say.
Do you guys want
to join?
To talk Coyote Ugly? If you start the podcast, I'll be on your first episode talking Coyote Ugly. We only talk about movies with animal names.
I like that movie back in the day.
Okay.
I haven't seen it in years.
I don't recall what I thought about it. It's been so long since I saw it.
It's been 25 years.
I'm assuming I watched it last in the year 2000.
I think it's been on TV more than it's probably been like 2010 or something. You know.
You said the movies are only movies with animals in them?
Yeah.
Or we'll do Air Bud week two. We'll do 101 Dalmatians.
Yeah. Only
we'll do
animal
Lady and the
movies.
Tramp.
That's all we watch.
Lady and the Tramp.
Coyote Ugly is not an animal movie, but if it's got an animal name in it, it still counts. Mm.
We're just going to run through a bunch of Disney animated animal movies.
Yes.
And we'll be good to go. Bambi. Lion King.
I hated Bambi. I didn't like that
one. I didn't care for it.
Pretty sad start.
Yeah, I wasn't a big fan. Fox and the Hound.
Yeah. I wasn't a big fan of Bambi. All right, that's the trash of the day. Up next, Chiefs Red Half Hour. He turned back the clock again. It's playoff times. You knew he was going to do it, and he sure did. We'll hear from him a little bit, too, next.
Welcome in to the Chiefs Red Half Hour. Every day at 11:30 with Cody and Gold on your new home for Chiefs football. 96.5, The Fan.
Our divisional round coverage brought to you by Bud Light, the official beer partner of your Kansas City Chiefs. Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you here on your home for the Chiefs. 96.5, The Fan. Here in about 25 minutes, we're expected to hear from Andy Reid right here. During Cody and Gold, it's been a little while since we've had a Monday one because the schedule's been a lot of Saturday games and all that, but we are going to hear from Coach Reid coming up as they get set to take on the Bills Sunday night, AFC title game, 7th straight title game, 6th at Arrowhead during this run, and of course, 1 win away from a Super Bowl, 2 from a 3-peat. Later on today in the 1 o'clock hour, we'll also have Jay Binkley join us around 1:10 or so. It'll be good to check in with Bink. Because there's also a national title game tonight. It feels like there's zero buzz. I get it. We're in Kansas City.
Kansas City, yeah.
There's a national title game tonight, apparently.
I'm sure there's a lot for watching, Notre Dame, who hasn't won a NCAA title since 1988. And Drew was having to catch me up because I didn't realize
back
that
when Lou Holtz
Ryan
was coaching.
Day apparently has a...
Oh, there's beef.
He has beef with there's an 88-year-old man.
They both
man.
Been talking smack back and forth, yeah.
Okay, but if an 80...
This goes back to a couple years ago.
My grandpa is getting ready to turn 95. If I find out the two of you have beef, I'd be like, will you leave a 95-year-old alone?
Well, Ryan Day's
you
an ass.
You can't be the person... Like, another 95-year-old can have beef with another 95-year-old. You, a person in their 30s, can't be beefing with someone who's 88.
I'd like to know where Lou Holtz is
Now. Well, Ryan Day...
Starting to kick his ass or something. He's 88.
Yeah, Ryan Day's an ass, so that shouldn't surprise you one bit. They are heavy favorites tonight. Eight and a half, depending
on the book. Plus 300 on the money line, I think, for Notre Dame.
Yeah, so we'll get to that later on. But let's get back to the Chiefs, of course. And we all saw this coming. We mentioned the trends on Friday's show. That come playoff time, Travis Kelce is a different football player. No matter what happens in the regular season. He's now done it 2 straight years where people question him in the regular season. You know, lost a step. He's old. He's washed. He sits out week 18. Last year, has a great postseason. He sits out week 18 this year. What does he do? He comes up with a 117-yard with a touchdown performance and was the most dominant player other than, I would say, George Karloftis at times on the field from a, just an individual perspective. He was sensational. And even though Xavier Worthy in the locker room, he was asked about Travis's play and he gave him a hard time. He said, young Kels probably gets a touchdown on that. That might be true. Maybe it's a touchdown 7 years ago, 5 years ago.
I think probably.
But he was sensational, man. He had his best performance of the season. He by far 102 yards would have been the record. It was 102. At one point, he had 102.
A little more than that.
That was already the best. He ends up with 117. He was sensational. He talked about turning back the clock in the locker room and how similar it was to a year ago.
Anytime you can get an opportunity to really, you know, work on the body and get healthy late in the season, man, I'm going to take advantage of that all the time. You saw me do it last year in the L.A. game and so on. So I'm always appreciative of, you know, the hard work that we put in so that we can get those opportunities.
So you felt that much better today having that big break?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, every time.
How did you take a few days
All right, we'll stop it there. But at the beginning, you could hear the beginning portion. He went on from there. But
like the truth is that, and I like it's not. I was not. I'd love to be like I'm the only person who was. We all know how this works. I told you before the playoffs. Alex Gold agreed. Everyone else, not everyone else. There's plenty of people who throughout the year try to during a regular season be like, he's washed. He's not the same Travis Kelce. He'll never be like, okay. What Travis Kelce has wisely started to do is Travis Kelce, I believe, in any regular season could still go for 1,100 yards. I think he's more than capable of just doing that. If that's what he had just chosen his path to be this regular season. But it would be to the detriment of what his postseason body and performance would be like. So he's saving himself. And when the lights turn on, nobody can guard Travis Kelce anymore. He looked, again, 22 years old, maybe, if you want to make the joke that he did in the Pat McAfee one.
He did it in the locker room,
too. He once again, okay, well, he's, get it, okay. You don't have to play the same one.
Because somebody said, hey, would you, hey, Xavier Worthy said you would, you know, young Kelce would have scored. And then the guy's like, what was that, like 25-year-old Kelce could do that? 22? And he was like, 22.
There you go. So, good. I can appreciate the fact that he's aiming on the joke. But the truth is that it becomes an immediate problem for the playoff teams because part of what I think you do, Gold, is you don't go back to tape from years and years and years ago. And it's when you're starting to break down a team and how you're going to defend them. Travis Kelce is not a part of how you're going to defend them. But because of the regular season he just had, he wasn't the biggest reason you were going to try to go about stopping the Chiefs. And then the postseason hits and different Travis Kelce shows up. He was incredible yesterday. Incredible. This is the best game he's had in 2 years, maybe. I don't know. It's better than every playoff game he had last year, too.
But this is the switch we talk about, you know, and how obvious it's been. The team does it, and he's a huge part of that, of course, but they're able to find that extra gear. It's cliche stuff, but they've done it time and time again, and that'll be the decision the Bills are going to have to make, because I don't know what the Texans were doing. I mean, it wasn't like Travis Kelce was just, you know, getting separated. He was wide open.
I know.
Wide open.
Yeah, he was.
Like, they just ignore.
I don't
know.
Did they forget? Like, they didn't even, like, look at him on tape?
There was a couple times that Aziz Alshire just looked like he totally lost him.
It was unbelievable how open he was. Buffalo will do a better job, I'm sure. It doesn't mean Kelce's going to only have 30 yards, but they'll do a better job. But that's where the Chiefs had one wide receiver catch a pass in this game. One wide receiver, and it was Xavier Worthy. D-Hop barely played. We can get to that later in the week, maybe. That was surprising.
It was.
A lot of that was, at one point in time, credit to the Texans' defensive front. You know, it wasn't the best O-line performance yet again, especially on the left side. Joe Tooney struggled at times early on in the game, and so they're getting the ball out quick, but it was still an offense that was sluggish at times. The only thing working really was Travis Kelce in a wide-open connection throughout the game, but Hollywood Brown didn't have a catch. You know, just, it was kind of crazy that if I would have told you going into the game that, only one wide receiver is getting a catch.
I would not have felt great about it, and yet they
what
won
happened?
Relatively handily.
Maybe
now,
you would have said Travis Kelce went off.
Yeah, I'll be honest. If you had said that, I'd be like, Travis Kelce have like 150 yards? I'd be like, yep, okay, well, then they're probably fine. When you look at it, this is why what Travis Kelce did in the regular season against your team doesn't matter. He played the Texans less than a month ago, and he finished the game with the exact number you just mentioned. He finished the game with 30 yards against the Texans. He was a non-factor in a Texans win when he faced the Bills about 2 months ago now, or just like a couple days over. Just about 2 months ago, he was a non-factor in that offensive performance. And you probably get lulled into comfort, probably not Buffalo at this point because they faced Kansas City enough, into thinking, well, we held him down the last time. Surely it will go the same again. Travis Kelce got to take, and this is really important, 30 days off of football. 30. Like, if you don't think at his age, a full month away from the sport doesn't have him feeling spry, you're delusional.
Yeah.
He's in a playoff run. He took a month off of football. He's going to be, and he gets 2 weeks off if they win this weekend. Like, he'll get to have more rest going into the postseason. Of course, I was impressed by Travis Kelce. Not surprising. Also makes me go back to the comments just real quick on the retirement stuff. When he was talking about it, and he was being a little more open in some of these interviews than we had seen before, is he had said, like, he still wants to play at a high level and he still wants to think he contributes. I think I would just tell you, don't just look at his regular season stats to determine that. Because if he goes through another postseason run like this, where he's just 100, 100, 100, touchdown, 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 tell me he can't sit, look at himself in the mirror and be like, no, I still got it. Like, the regular season, yeah, be damned. I mean, he just proved the whole world he still got.
I'll tell you this, though. We've had, you and I have had, whether it was last year or this year in the locker room, you know, there's times where we all know now with the podcast and his brand internationally and everything like that, he does a little less interviews and talking locally, and that's fine. He was as happy and as like, I mean,
he in a good mood, huh?
Oh, in a great mood. And you're like, well, of course he was in a great mood. But there's you can tell there's a difference. I mean,
it had a little extra pep in his step.
Absolutely. I mean, there was 50 media members surrounding him trying to talk to him, obviously, at this time. But like this, he was in a, like, you know, when he's in a good mood, like, there were plenty of games during the regular season. They won and he was fine. And like, you know, didn't necessarily want to, you know, want to talk or whatever. This game, like, was in a great mood. Feeling
come on
all, like,
over.
I just felt fresh and everything. So sure. There's a difference even in that, I would argue, this time around than 2 months ago.
I hope he's feeling as good as possible. Got another tough one against Buffalo coming up on Sunday for yet another AFC title game appearance and a chance for Patrick Mahomes to go to his fifth Super Bowl. He is 29 years old, which is ludicrous. We'll see. That game will obviously continue to break down. How they got there, obviously, not just Travis Kelce. I mean, he was definitely a big part of that. I'm not trying to pretend like, but this goes back to the same thing. The difference between playoff versions of yourself and the regular season version of yourself. You and I never cared that Patrick Mahomes this season did not have the counting stats to do it. But one stat that you and I have continued to emphasize more and more and more as the regular season got end, and a huge difference of why they have become borderline unbeatable here towards the end of the year is the turnovers. This is a team who was giving it away for free at the beginning of the year. And those are the games that you're remembering this Chiefs team that managed to, oh, I don't even know how they won that game. And they gave the ball away multiple times. They haven't turned it over since the Buffalo game. Like, they, or Patrick Mahomes hasn't turned it over since the Buffalo game. And yesterday, he was doing normal Mahomes things. Immediately a rush over. I told you my favorite bet was Mahomes' longest rush over 12 and a half yards. It's like the first run on the first drive. Mm-hmm. Took literally zero time.
He runs there. More in the playoffs.
So here he goes. Here comes the legs for Mahomes. And then he makes that play when someone's wrapped around his ankles and hits Mahomes between the eyes on a touchdown catch. He just did, like, he
just had a laugh after that
stuff.
Touchdown, yeah. Pass because it was just ridiculous. And it was a dart right to Travis Kelce, who then Kelce just kind of stood up and looked down. Now, he wasn't over the defender. That's why he didn't get flagged for those going conspiracy stuff. He didn't stand over the defender. He was a yard or two away. That's why he didn't get flagged for it. But it was interesting to see, though, for the millionth time, seemingly, despite how the game flow is going, despite how maybe you're playing or not playing, in those gotta have it moments, and it felt like at that time that was a gotta have it on the third down, and instead of settling for a field goal, he goes and makes just a sensational play that, you're right, it's not even a top five or top 10 play of Mahomes' career or anything like that, even though it occurred in the playoffs.
For it's a super cool play.
For a lot of quarterbacks, that would be a top five play in a heartbeat.
Our producer, Drew Nixon, was immediately pointing out a touchdown that Joe Burrow threw earlier this year that looked very similar.
Yeah, it was in a regular season game.
In a regular season game in which a season his team did not make the playoffs. But, hey, I credited that throw. It was a great throw.
The play is
It just doesn't
similar.
Mean as much.
That's and all
his,
I was saying.
And his guy's knee was on the ground, but that's a whole other story.
Oh, yeah. You know what? Actually, can we admit that? He was down?
No,
can
he
you admit
was
he was down?
He was not. The photo, there is a sliver of green on there. Plus, they also reviewed it.
I don't want to talk about a 9-8 football team today. I'm good. I'm
just saying the throws were similar. They were obviously Mahomes. The play's ridiculous, nonetheless. It doesn't take away from that. Obviously, yeah. The play for him to fit the throw too. There was Travis. He had to fit the throw right through a little a gap between
they were
Shire
making it seem like that was like
there.
I didn't think the broadcast gave that throw enough credit. Like
those
like,
really good, really
the athleticism
good
they obviously did right. The like he's being tackled around his ankles, but like yeah, Drew. There were like He actually squeezed that between two defenders.
Yeah.
Travis Kelce wasn't wide open on that play. Travis Kelce was still, like, guarded a little bit. Like, if he misses that ball a foot to the left or a foot to the right, a defender might still be able to get their hand on that ball, hypothetically. I just look back and I'm like, how do they win the game? And the simple thing is, they didn't turn the ball over. The Texans did not either.
But special teams, honestly. I mean, there's look. Some of the things will pop out at you. You look third downs. The Texans were better, more yards, all that. But
all the field
eight
goal
sacks,
and extra point and passes, and
then right out of the gate, even on the return, I know the Chiefs settled for three. The fact that immediately though, Nico Armillo has the return. Yeah, it was. They gave him three free points. Yes, it was a win to keep him out of the end zone, but you gave him three free points. You cannot do that in a playoff game if you're the Texans. When you're the underdog and when you're just overmatched, and I think it's clear they were, despite the first half making it really interesting. But other than the first quarter at one point, I don't think the Texans ever had a chance to take the lead.
No.
Other than the first quarter when it was 3-0.
Which, right? Again, that doesn't really matter. And that's how I kind of expected the game to go, but that's Mahomes is just surgical. And I get it. They always have a drive, right? There was the time when the Texans immediately gave the Chiefs the ball back, and it was a short field. And if the Chiefs had just gone and kick a field goal, the game was over in the fourth quarter, and the Texans still had technically one more chance in order to do it. And then the following drive, Mahomes delivered the death blow. That's not a do or die situation. If it is so someone asked the question, I don't remember who it was, on Twitter last night, I give him credit, which was a fair question. And Lamar ended up going down to score the touchdown. He didn't get the 2-point conversion. But in that moment, when Lamar Jackson got the ball at the 10-yard line in that game with 2.5 minutes to play, said, what chance would you give Mahomes to go down there and score? And I'm like, I don't know, 80, 90?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it's not 100, but it's way better than 50. That's what we're talking about. It's just they could have settled for a field goal, you're right, and opened up the door, and instead he's got a guy wrapped around his legs.
The ending of the game was pretty wild, though, for those that partake in some sports betting. So all week we discussed the line. The Chiefs were 8 or 8.5 point favorites. Then Sunday, an hour before kickoff, the line closed at 9.5, meaning the Chiefs to cover would need a win by 10 or more points. You guys know how the game ended. The Texans were deciding to kick a field goal, and if they make the field goal, the Texans would have, in that moment, covered, right? The Chiefs would not have covered. It was going to make it a 12-point game. So the fact that the Chiefs blocked the kick was just massive, right? Once again, Chanel comes with a huge block. Unbelievable.
Chanel's the most 50% player who shows up.
But he's so athletic. That's what it is. He's an athletic freak. And so he gets another block. And at that point, you're like, oh, this is hilarious. Unbelievable. After all that, the Chiefs are still going to cover. It doesn't really matter. Then we know the Chiefs decided for time reasons and to make sure that there wasn't a risk of a block punt return for a touchdown. They had Matt Araiza run backwards and run around the end zone for a few seconds and take a safety. They gifted 2 points back to the Texans. So at that point, it once again became a 9-point game. And that was a massive swing in sports books. Normally it's like, oh, this screws over the public, but no, this is the thing. If you were going to back the Chiefs, I don't feel too sorry for you if you bet an hour before kickoff when it was 8.5 all week. And for whatever reason you waited till it was 9.5. But what happened is Texans bettors, if you waited till kickoff, it was smart because you got the better number. I bring this all up to say is Chiefs backers covered at 8.5. Texans backers at 9.5 covered, meaning for very few times the books actually lost and got screwed. So round of applause for everybody out there, because we talk about middling the number. The books got middled.
Yeah.
Chiefs backers at 8 or 8.5 covered. Texans backers at 9.5 covered because the Chiefs won by 9. It was a beautiful thing.
What a time.
But if you're a Chiefs fan and you don't, if you're talking about a big spread, the line was never going to go down to 7 before kickoff. I'll be honest, not all that smart if you took the Chiefs 9.5 right before kickoff. You had all week to take them at 8 or 8.5.
Yeah, it would have been kind of silly to take, that number grew and only right towards the end there. So for the most part, as you said, everybody won. That was my point late in the game when the Texans were driving. I'm like, the only people who care about this last minute Texans drive is bettors. Because it's like, they're either going to make this game inside the spread or they're not. They didn't. And then the Chiefs essentially won it for everybody by taking an intentional safety, which was smart, by the way. This is not like some big deep conspiracy. The Chiefs weren't trying to win you all money. They just knew that by doing that they were going to ensure a win. But it is I couldn't imagine if you're the one person of the Chiefs plus 9.5. You'd be good.
Or minus nine and a half.
You'd be
good. It's a bad bet. At that point, it's a bad bet, though. You had all week to do it, man. You're betting the Chiefs minus 9.5 right before kickoff was, frankly, a dumb bet to make.
It's crazy.
-8.5 backers, very fortunate.
What was that parlay that you said you teased out? Like, did you hit on that goal? I can't remember the exact one, but you teased.
Well, I teased
somebody down and
teased the Chiefs.
Put a parlay together.
Teased the Chiefs down to 2.5, and then the Rams up to 12.5. So I needed that last Rams score before the last drive. Otherwise,
yeah, you did.
Needed
that Rams score. Yeah. Were they really?
They had them right there. Their Rams were right there. The last drive, they were right there. Remember, they were only down 6, so touchdown and extra point, they would have won the game. They were there, but it is what it is.
Same problem. They made more mistakes than the Eagles.
Right.
The Eagles played mistake-free football. Normally, that's just kind of a difficult thing to overcome. And now we get to find out whether Spags has got some answer for Josh Allen again in a postseason. And on the other side, it's the Eagles once again. I can't believe it. It's the Eagles again, Chiefs again. You're like, okay, so I got to watch 5 Super Bowls with Patrick Mahomes. And 2 are against the 49ers and 2 are against the Eagles?
4 of the 5 are rematches.
You got any other NFC opponents over there? Like, what's going on?
Mm-hmm.
Did you guys like the fact that NBC put the yardages up when it was a snow globe and you couldn't see the yard lines at all? Did you like that?
Oh, the yard markers?
Yeah,
yes.
I don't mind that.
Yeah.
I actually didn't.
I kind of like to know what the hell's going on.
I didn't care for it too much.
I want to know where they're running.
Well, they had the line of scrimmage and they had the first down, but you didn't know where they were on the field. I kind of enjoyed that a little bit. We have no idea where they're at right now.
I like to know.
I kind of enjoyed watching that. I didn't like them putting
Here's
up
the weird thing. It's
the 30 and 40 and all that.
Visually, it looks really badass. In general, I don't think it's good football.
Players hate it, I
think. That's the thing. Like, where are we? Oh, I love the snow game. It's visually really cool to look at. In general, that game was a high-flying pace game, and then all of a sudden the weather, and then it went down to a crawl. And I know some of you are like, oh, that's old school football. I love it. Yeah. I'm just saying, look at the other game. Look at the Commanders Lions game. Played in a dome. And I'm not saying play games inside instead of out. My point is that it ruined how really good the Rams-Eagles game could have been versus what we saw with Detroit and L.A. where the weather conditions were perfect and we saw the high-flying offense. I'm just saying Rams and Eagles could have been more high-flying.
I just think sports can look different, and I think weather should matter. Like, I think weather should have an element.
No, I want games that I'm fine with outdoor stadium. It's not like an anti-outdoor thing. I'm just saying, like, the acknowledge of, like, outdoor, would I rather have 8 inches of snow on the ground or 70 and sunny? I'll still take 70 and sunny outside from a football perspective.
I can't remember. There was one player. I don't remember who it was, but they were asked about it. They're like, everybody says football. This is football weather. He was like, no, it's not. It's really not. It's not good. Players don't like it. The coaches don't like it. People like watching it on TV, but it's miserable.
I like it.
Were you cold?
From the 816. Sorry, I came to the... Because we got to take a break here in a minute and get to Andy Reid. And I'll address this at some point from the 816. Sorry, I came to the radio late. Has Cody apologized to FAU yet? Possibly a song apology.
Look, I don't think you have to apologize, but you can at least acknowledge that in his 6 snaps, he was effective on every snap.
I have acknowledged that at different points this season. I think FAU had several nice plays. You know where he's done a really nice job? He has become very efficient in setting the edge in the run game.
Yes.
And as a result of that, he's had some very positive plays, some negative plays, actually, for the opposing offenses in doing that. He has done a really nice job. But if I had told you that the Chiefs' first-round pick was going to play a dozen snaps and be really good at setting the edge a couple of times a game, I don't think that's what you would have wanted out of that.
Of course not. I think people just text you because you were very, very, very...
anti that pick.
Not just the pick. There were some times where it seemed a little, I don't want to say personal, but it got personal with FAU.
It got a little
anti-FAU.
It got a little outside football, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fair.
I think he did have
a couple of nice plays. Good for FAU.
All right, up next, we're expected to hear from Chiefs head coach Andy Reid. We'll find out how he's feeling heading into their 7th AFC title game.